Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Virginia basketball picks up a much-needed win, 64-52, over a Louisville team that is a Louisville team in name only. They're not a traditional Louisville team. I'm Chris Graham, joined by Scott German here on the podcast. We were courtside, sitting side-by-side in JPJ last night for the ACC game. Big Monday. Didn't feel like Big Mondays, though, Scott. Those two teams are not the teams of vintage, recent vintage. But Virginia gets the win. What were your first impressions of last night?
It didn't feel like Big Monday, but yet it was a big game for both teams because both teams coming off losses. Louisville coming off of a horrendous loss at home to Notre Dame. And I didn't see that game, but from what I've read, they played very poorly enough that they got booed off their home floor. And I've been there, so it doesn't surprise me. You know, Louisville, West Virginia, Maryland, birds of a feather, so to speak. In Virginia, but, you know, for UVA, it kind of felt like the UVA of old, is that we won that game. We had a couple of mini cavalanches on offense, especially the start the game, and we went up 21-5, I think 22-5. And then we had a very good defensive game. So it kind of was like deja vu, to quote Yogi Berra, a deja vu all over again. It wasn't a very pretty game, but yet we shouldn't have probably expected anything but a pretty game when, you know, Virginia's involved in it. I wasn't really impressed with Louisville. There's some speculation that they may have packed it in coming into that game. They played in spurts, but for the most part, they just looked like a glorified AAU team to me.
Yeah, I won't buy the pack it in kind of thing. They were down 27-8. So it was 22-5, like you said, Scott, at one point. It was 27-8, 6 minutes and 30 seconds or so to go in the first half, and they cut it to 4. A team packing it in down 19 points in the first half on the road, you would just give up. And they didn't. They got it back and they got it to 4 at 45-41. I think it was down to 5 at 62-57 after a pair of threes. And when Virginia had after it got down to 4, Virginia went on a run and got it back up to 11 at 62-51. And then a couple of threes got it back down to 5. They could have easily just given that up. After the game, Chris Mack, the head coach at Louisville, talked about, I mean, both teams had a short turnaround. He noted that because both teams played on Saturday, then they played on Monday. It's kind of rare in the regular season, obviously, to play two games in 3 days like that. But he said a big issue was that his team didn't adjust well early to Virginia's mover blocker offense. And a lot of Virginia fans will complain about the mover blocker. It's a lot of screens. It's very patient offense. You know, it can lull you to sleep as a fan, but it's what it also does to opponents. When I say lull to sleep, you know, Mac noted that, you know, when you're defending Virginia's guys running off screens, you've got to run off those screens constantly. I mean, in a 30-second shot clock, you know, the two bigs are setting screens, you know, all the time. They're very rarely posting up. Jaden Gardner posts up more than guys in recent years have, but there are screens being set all the time. And what Virginia's game relies on is you not being hard on running off all those screens. And so early on, Virginia was able to exploit Louisville's, you know, Louisville's got a lot of transfers. They haven't played, this group hadn't played Virginia, like some, you know, other ACC teams with more veteran guys. And so they didn't adjust. When they finally adjusted, they did fine. Credit to Virginia, they exploited that early. And then when Louisville smacked them in the mouth a couple times, Virginia didn't do what they've done. This year's team has done a lot this year. The Navy game at the start of the season, the JMU game up in Harrisonburg, the Carolina game. We've seen this Virginia team get smacked in the mouth and then not respond. They responded last night. So I'll give credit to Virginia for having a nice couple of responses to pull that one out in the last few minutes.
Yeah, they did. I think the four-point lead, Louisville narrowed it to within 4, but Virginia went on a little mini run, 7-0 to 11. And I believe Louisville actually, from that deficit, kind of clawed back to within about 5 or 6. So Virginia, again, had a little response to that. So they got hit in the mouth a couple of times and responded favorably both. So that's encouraging. That's really encouraging. So I was thinking about it and I was looking at Stat Broadcast again with the stats and all the analytical data that we're bombarded with, that my wife thinks I'm studying to be some nuclear physicist when she sees that on the computer. So if we can flip roles with you a little bit, I want to talk about two players last night from Virginia. I mean, we could talk about a lot. We could talk about Kea Clark, the birthday boy, and Gardner, but I want to talk about Reese Beekman and Caden Sedgwick. Are my eyes playing tricks on me, or are we seeing two players starting to emerge in Tony's system? Because I was really impressed with Beekman last night. He scored 2 points, but dished out the 11 assists, but he just really is beginning to look like he's taking the team on his shoulders.
Yeah, let's start with Beekman. The 11 assists, I went back and looked through the play-by-play and correlated everything. Two of the 11 assists were three-pointers. Five of them were passes to Jaden Gardner. So he accounted for with the two threes and then the others, and then his 2 points on one of two shooting. I've never seen a guy control a game like he did with two shots from the field. He accounted for 26 points in his game for Virginia. That's a good night for a guy who only shot the ball twice. You know, when you look back, I haven't added up his numbers here lately. You know, his scoring number would go down a little bit, but when you look at his recent run, he's shooting over 55% from the field. He's shooting in the mid 40s from three over his last, I want to say, 8 or 9 games. I'll leave it as general as that. I'm going to write a column later this week and kind of give you more specifics on that. But you look at what he's done lately. He had 12 in the loss to NC State. He had 19 in the win at Pitt, 19 points and 8 assists in the win at Pitt. 6.7 assists in the loss to Wake Forest, played great defense on Alondis Williams. You know, he's putting up some numbers, 11 points in the win at, over Virginia Tech, 13 points in the loss to North Carolina. He had 20 in the loss to Clemson. That was really his coming out party that game. 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 5 from three. And ever since that first Clemson game, he has been lights out. Shooting wise, and because he's shooting so well, he is able to, you know, shooting so well from the perimeter, he's been able to then, get in the lane, get to the rim. And when somebody was asking me this last night after the game, so what is it about Beekman? What is he doing so special? Well, okay, so he's making you respect his jump shot. We've been saying for a year and a half, if once he starts hitting jumpers consistently, 3-point jumpers and even those, you know, mid-range jumpers, once he starts doing that consistently, then it makes it harder for guys to sag off him on the perimeter when he gets the ball. He's so good at getting around guys. So when he gets around a guy, the defense has two choices. They either have to have a guy come help. If a guy comes and helps, he dishes it. He sets up an easy shot, as he did last night, 11 assists. He only had 2 shot attempts. And if they don't help out, he's going to get to the rim. He's so good at getting to the rim. And he's so good at finishing at the rim. So, offensively, I mean, defensively, he's been an elite player already. The second he stepped on grounds last season, he was an elite defensive player. Him becoming an elite two-way player makes this Virginia team different. You know, I know this team, you know, may have, we'll talk about later more detail, this Virginia team's going to have trouble getting an NCAA tournament, but man, with what Tony Bennett has coming in next year, Reese Beekman coming back as a incumbent point guard with 2 years experience and the confidence he's been developing the last 8 or 9 games, he's going to be something to look for the rest of this year and then certainly his last 2 years at Virginia.
I jotted this stat down since December 22nd. Reese is 12 of 20 from behind the line, 12 of 20. And he's already taken as many shots from 3-point range as he did all of last year. So he's slowly becoming an offensive threat. We knew his defense, as you said, was elite. So, you know, I have this little mind game that I play because I've followed UVA basketball for so long. I mean, I can make comparisons. This guy compares to this guy, and this guy goes back to – I mean, if you want, I can go all the way back to Barry Parkhill in that type of reverse chronological order. But is it too much of a stretch to say that Reese is starting to begin starting to take on the look of a London Parentes?
I think, in no offense at all to London Parentes, what he did at Virginia in his 4 years, starting basically all 4 years. He didn't start right away as a freshman, but he took over regularly in the starting lineup midway through his freshman season, keyed that first ACC regular season and tournament championship for Tony's teams, and that really set the tone for everything we've done since with Virginia. No disrespect to London Parentes, but I think that's a low bar for Reese Beekman.
London, it probably is, because I mean, just looking at it, obviously Beekman's a better defender. He's probably a better passer. We know he finishes well, but he's not the shooter London was. And so if he becomes the shooter London was, then he's All-American.
Well, and I think that's why I say low bar. I think if he can, he's showing the shooting. He's showing that now in the last nine games since the first Clemson game back in December. And what sets him apart from really, when you start looking at UVA point guards historically, what sets him apart is his defensive skills. He can guard anybody, his rebounding abilities, and then his playmaking abilities. And yeah, now because he's knocking down jump shots, he's getting the respect of defenders. Yeah, I really do think that, you know, he'll start, he'll come out next season, preseason. He'll be a first team preseason all ACC guy.
Setting the bar, because I am 100%. I think London Parentes is one of the most underrated stars in Virginia basketball, because he was such a good passer, and such a good, he was a great finisher, had a great shot. But I think Beekman is on par to surpass London, especially if he continues to improve offensively, and like you said, gets that jump shot down. You're right. First team All Conference preseason next year.
Yeah, London's senior season, he averaged 12.7 points, shot 41% from the floor, 37% from three. 3.8 assists. I'm looking for numbers similar in terms of points per game. We know that Virginia's limited possessions hurt their points per game. I'd be disappointed if he only averaged 3.8 assists per game next year. I mean, he's doing better than that this year. Beekman is, and he's only going to continue to improve. If his shooting numbers can be what London's were, his defensive abilities will. Yeah. His defensive, because you know, when you start thinking about what guys can do on the floor, again, he controlled the game last night, shooting the ball twice. That's what stands out. You know, London averaged 7.1 field goal attempts per game at his UVA career, and he averaged 10.4 shots a game as a senior. You know, and he had better guys around him to pass the ball to. Let's be honest about that. At least this year. Last year, we had some guys to dish it out to. Beekman doesn't have the guys that London had to dish it out to when he's penetrating and needing to kick out. So he'll have those guys next year. Wow. You know, those recruits coming in, he's got guys who can knock down shots coming in next year. So, boy, that's going to be fun to watch when you think about Beekman penetrating the lane. And, you know, then defenders have to think, do I cheat off of Isaac Trout? Do I cheat off of Isaac McNeely? Do I cheat off of Leon Bond? Or do I let Beekman get to the rim? You know, that's choosing your poison right there. So, no, I think the sky really is the limit for Reese Beekman.
Yeah, and again, for those of us that follow the basketball program almost as a religion, and we understand that not every year is going to be a national championship year. Well, some of us understand that. I'm raise my hand in guilt that I have those aspirations every year. But I'm really looking at this year as being almost part of next year.
Yeah.
In that I'm just looking whether we make the tournament. Sure, if we make the tournament, great. It gives us something to do for maybe one game or two games. But
yeah.
I'm looking at this year as setting the foundation for next year to see the progress that Beekman makes, to see the progress that Shedrick makes. Those are the guys that are going to be vital parts of next year's team.
Well, and Kafaro, let's talk about Kafaro and Shedrick. Yeah, I look at those guys as sort of the two-headed monster at center.
Well, that two-headed monster got us 20 points and 13 rebounds last night.
Yeah. And that's I think that's how you need to look at Virginia's centers. If you add the numbers up, pretty much every game anymore, I mean, ACC play, if you add their numbers up, they are a first-team All-ACC center. Yeah.
And, Chris, you have to. And Tony's a master at that because right now they're both foul-prone.
Yeah.
And there's if you're trying to get one – If you think one of those two right now at this point in their development is going to stay on the floor and give you 30 minutes, you might as well go buy the Powerball lottery tonight because they're not. They're going to pick up three fouls in the first half or two early, and they're going to set the rest of the half. So Tony, we watch him. It's like a toll gate that between Cafaro. Sometimes he plays them both, which is interesting, but if you look, I'm sure Tony's looking at it. His center last night gave him 20 points and 13 rebounds.
They're averaging 10.7 points, 9.1 rebounds in 38 minutes a game. And they're both shooting over 50%. Shedrick 58.5, Cafaro 50.9. And I mean, lately Cafaro has looked like, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, for the longest time, we wondered why is he even in the lineup? He has hands of stone. He can't do anything around the rim. He earned that starting job, and it's interesting. I think this team is better, even though Shedrick, I think, he's got the higher, much higher upside between the two. I think that him coming off the bench, it's almost like, you know, what you would watch when Shedrick was starting, and he, you know, talent-wise, he's the starter. But when he started, you almost had to wonder, okay, how long is it going to take him for him to get two fouls? And I think in the Virginia Tech game, he got two fouls in the first 3 minutes, and that's when Cafaro earned his time, 16 points and 9 rebounds in that game, coming in off the bench to sub for Shedrick. And, you know, so instead of worrying about when Shedrick gets his two fouls and has to go to the bench, you let Cafaro go in and bruise for a while, then Shedrick comes in, and you know it's the concept of the sixth man. He is a great sixth man. He's really sliding into that role really well, and I think he's better in that role than he was as a starter, at least this year.
So So I watched a lot of the game this morning again on YouTube, and I did not check this out. But tell me what talking about Shedrick again. How many fouls did he pick up last night, and how many minutes did he play again?
Let's see. Last night, Shedrick had one foul in 24 minutes. Cafaro also had one foul in 19 minutes.
So the thing that's – and I love to critique a player from the defensive side. I'd love to watch how they play defense. And Shedrick is still, you know, I would say the best word is he's a little inconsistent. He makes some silly mistakes, fouls a little too much. But last night on defense, if you watch that game again, he was disruptive without just being some out of control locomotive. His timing, his positioning last night was just significantly better than what I've ever seen from him. And then in the post game, the first time I've listened to him address the media, man, he was impressive. He was confident, well-spoken. And his stock is, if I were out there buying stock, I'd be buying all I could of him right now.
He had three block shots last night. The concern I got with him sometimes is he's so good at blocking shots that he tries to block every shot, and he doesn't block every shot. And when he doesn't block a shot, he leaves his mate because he's a now last night one of his block shots was actually at least one and down the stretch was a guy who was posting him up and he blocked him one-on-one. A lot of his block shots early in the season, mid-season, were the kind where he's helping, you know, when a guard when a guy gets by a guard and he's coming in as the help defender. If you don't block that shot, it's actually, you know, it's not helpful to the Virginia cause because there's nobody back to block your guy out rebounding wise, and too many times he was allowing those shots. You got to learn that a little bit better, you know, choose when to help better, and I think that's where Cafaro has the advantage. He's got one more year of experience. The one number I'll throw out, because I was saying this during the game last night to you, Scott. The plus minus number is a underrated number. It's simply for those who, you know, don't dive into these stats all the time. Plus minus is simply the margin when you're on the floor. Last night, Cafaro's was plus 12. Shedrick's was plus 7. Now credit to Shedrick. He was only plus 1 at halftime. So he ended up being plus six in the second half. But Cafaro doesn't do anything glitzy or glamorous. He's not going to block. He didn't have a block shot last night. He's not a shot blocker. He's a great position defender, and you can't move him when he's rebounding. And I think when Shedrick's still, you know, he's still needing to put on a little bit more weight. He's looking more muscular. His shoulders and his arms look more muscular. Once he puts on a little bit more heft, it'll be harder to move him out from his rebounding position, which happens sometimes for him. And I think as he learns the art of the block shot, not just blocking the shot, but when to block the shot and when maybe to not block the shot, he'll be even more effective. And they're both great. You know, this is the thing. 10.7 points, 9.1 rebounds a game from these two guys in their 38 minutes a game. Virginia's mover blocker offense, Tony doesn't care if they score a point. They're supposed to be out there setting screens. Exactly. Think about Jack Salt was a starting center on the national championship team. He averaged 3.3 points a game that year. So whatever if you're getting double digits from these guys, that's well above what is expected from a five in Tony's system.
In Tony's system, if you look back, with the exception of, well, the big three is the big three of recent, Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, and Hunter. With the exception of those three guys, most recruits of Tony's, it takes about 2 to 3 years to learn the system.
Those guys, Hunter was a redshirt his first year, and Guy and Jerome didn't do much their first year. So even those guys needed
some time. Even those. But if you look at like the players down, like Joe Harris, Brogdon, it took a couple of years. Anthony Gill, Isaiah Wilkins was just struggled to make the rotation his first couple of years.
Devin Hall, I think it took him till his redshirt junior year to get regular time.
Diakite, it took Huff four years.
It took Huff 4 years, and he played five. Yeah, and Diakite, same kind of the same boat. Yeah, exactly.
So we got kind of spoiled with
– and quite a few of those guys are in the NBA right now.
Exactly. Let's see, Jerome, Hunter, Guy, Huff, Hauser. Yeah, I mean, Huff, Hauser.
Diakite.
Diakite. So that's the beauty of having Tony as the coach. We can, you can enjoy the process. Even though we're struggling, I mean, we say we're struggling. We've beaten Louisville 13 out. Louisville's a heck of a good program. And we've beaten them 13 out of the last 15 times. I mean, Louisville's one of those elite programs that you think of in college basketball, and we own them.
And one of those wins, there were only two. So one of those wins was on a last second shot in their arena. I don't remember the other one very well. So, but I know one was a last second shot for a guy who won 2 points a game.
Here's a great thought. Maybe the two greatest wins in the Yum Yum Center belong to Virginia.
Yeah, the bank three by DeAndre, and then of course the Kihei Kite play, and then the overtime win to get to the Final Four over Purdue. Yeah, they should have a statue of Tony Bennett outside the Yum Center.
Exactly. So there's going to be ups and downs. We know that, but Tony's system works. His system works. You just have to be patient, which is not in my vocabulary. I'm one of
it's
these.
Not.
Last I'm a night person that can preach it out, but I can't comprehend it always.
Last night with a 10-point lead in the second half, a missed shot leads Scott German to say on press row, this team has no talent.
Yeah. It's a wonder.
I'm saying one possession, Scott. They're allowed one possession.
Yeah. It's a wonder anyone sits beside. It's a wonder that Eric doesn't have me on a row just by myself.
Well, there's a catwalk that you could get a great view of the game from.
I mean, I'm leaning over when I'm not getting any attention from you. I'm leaning to the right and complaining to Jerry. And I'm sure what both of you are hearing is blah, 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 blah.
No, I can hear every word. I'm sure what Jerry's art, Jerry Ratcliffe's his great skill is that he can hear you, but he ignores you. I can't
That's a
ignore
wonderful
you.
Skill.
I can't do it.
Yeah, that's a wonderful skill. I'm sure our wives would admit that, well, mine would, that I mastered that one long ago.
Oh no! Well, here's where I have to admit that when I'm watching a game at home with my lovely wife, I have to watch the game in a different room often because there's so much curse and abuse going on that it doesn't bother her as much. I mean, she's used to it after 21 years of it, but the poor dogs, they can't handle it. So I have to go in a different part of the house to watch the game. Somehow in public, I'm able to hold that in when we're sitting there on press row.
I can't make that transition. I had to move to the middle of the woods in the middle of nowhere in order to be able to fully watch a game the way I like to watch it.
Without the police coming every time. Yeah.
Yeah. Without the police. So we moved to Notre Dame, and that's a good team. That's going to be a really huge test for us.
Yeah, I haven't studied Notre Dame quite like I want to yet. So I'm not going to say anything too authoritative. But, yeah, they're 5-2 in the ACC. If the season ended today, they're likely a tournament team. I was looking at that too, Scott. You know, for all the talk about how down the ACC is this year, now I'm basing this I'm talking about Notre Dame more specifically in a second, but I'm basing what I'm about to say when I look at what KenPom does. KenPom.com is among the websites that'll project out how a season will play for a team based on how they're playing right now and then whether they should win or lose. I've got six teams from the ACC making the tournament, and Notre Dame is certainly one of them. I would have, if the season ended today, we would be the cutoff. We being Virginia would be the cutoff. There are seven teams in the ACC with a winning record in ACC play. Virginia 6-4. Now, all those teams, technically, I mean, Virginia is only a game out of first place. The first place teams are 6-2. So I know that you say that's two losses. Virginia's got four. Virginia's got six wins, and those two teams have six wins. You have to average that out. Virginia's a game out of first place. Which is amazing for this team. I mean,
yeah, and Chris, if you look at the schedule, like I have, Miami and Florida State are ahead of us.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Miami's got two tough games coming up. They play at Tech Wednesday night. Now, Tech's playing pretty lousy, but that's not a given that Miami's going to win that game. And I think Miami then goes home to Wake to play Wake. I may be wrong on that. But
I mean, look at this real quick. Yeah.
I mean, there are losses.
It's Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, Virginia, Georgia Tech. So they got two with Georgia Tech. But then they've got at Wake. They have two with Virginia. They've got two with Virginia Tech. They've got Wake on the road. Notre Dame is at home at least for them. That's not easy for them. I mean, here's the thing, Scott. It's not easy for anybody. The schedule's backloaded pretty much for everybody. For everybody in contention, you look at Florida State. They got Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech. They've got Wake at home, Carolina away, Duke away. That's a rematch game. And Virginia at Virginia, as we know, Virginia will be hosting in late February. And they finish with Notre Dame, NC State. Virginia's schedule is not easy either. I think Virginia's not easy is good because. We need, from a ratings standpoint. Yeah. From a computer standpoint, Virginia, I think is 100 in the NET right now, which that'll improve with the strength of schedule.
Right.
Virginia's got two with Miami, two with Duke, among the games. So, it's backloaded for all these teams. There are seven teams within a game of first place in the ACC, and they're all pretty much going to beat up each other here in the next, 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, and the other fortunate thing for Virginia is I don't believe we've lost any games due to COVID, have we?
Not yet, no.
And if you look, there's some teams, like Tech is 2-6. Tech has only played eight games. Tech's got three tough games this week. Tech has North Carolina last night, which they got beat by 10. They host Miami and then I think they go to Florida State.
To Florida State, yeah. Host Miami, go to. They're playing the two leaders right now, back-to-back.
Even if Tech plays well, by Saturday evening, Tech could be all but done at 2-9.
They would, or they'd be 2-8, 10-11 overall. Yeah,
2-8, excuse me. So there's going to be some teams because of losing some games or having some games postponed and having to play three games in a week that you know they're going to be taxed as far as depth goes. So I see the ACC regular season winner, and I projected this out way too much time on my hands here. I see the ACC winner. And tell me if you think I'm accurate. The winner of the regular season, I think, is going to have a minimum of 4 losses.
Oh, a minimum of 4. Yeah, right now.
Possibly 5.
Yeah, I think 5 might be better. 15-5, because, I mean, Duke's already got 2 losses. And
they haven't played. They played Carolina twice. They still have Miami, I believe, again, don't they?
Well, Duke's only 5-2 in the ACC. You talk about some games coming up. Yeah, they got
– Duke is not deep.
That's right, and they're not deep, right?
They're not deep. You know, they usually recruit
– free this week starting tonight, if you want to say Tuesday, Saturday, Monday – and then they play they play Saturday, Monday. Virginia is the Monday. Then they play Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday. They got some games coming up. They got, you know, they got to play the 20. So, Virginia's played 10. They've played 7. They got to make up some games. And yeah, but when you say that, what that means is, I mean, and I guess Notre Dame's only played 7 so far. Notre Dame's 5-2. Let's look at Notre Dame real quick. They play Wednesday, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday. They've got some games to make up. And Virginia, the one game with Virginia this coming weekend is actually just on regular schedule for them.
Right.
Unfortunately for us there. But some of these games are going to be impacted because of tired legs. And that's going to be an issue. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think Virginia has any – well, we already said they haven't missed any games. So, technically, the schedule should unfold as in the normal fashion.
Well, but normal fashion includes now when the season started, Scott, Miami, Saturday, February 5th, Duke, Monday, February 7th, didn't look like what it looks like now because Miami coming into the season, you figured would be like, you know, 12-15 in the league. We play Miami and Duke back to back and play Duke on a Monday. So that'll be fun.
It's going to be a, when the calendar flips over to February, man, it's going to be a sprint to the finish, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, but that's where, you know, okay, Virginia needs these games. When I looked at their NET, Virginia's actually got 1 quad 1 win. That Providence win really stands out now. How did we beat? I mean, and Virginia won that game by 18 points. I really can't figure that one out now when you look at the season, how it's unfolded since. But 1 quad 1 win, I think it's, you know, it's like – 5 wins now when you add up quad 1 and 2. That's not enough right now, certainly, to get you there. What's really odd about the NET, though, is, you know, Virginia and Virginia Tech's resumes. Virginia's obviously got a better resume right now than Virginia Tech in the NET. And Tech is somewhere around 55 and Virginia's 100. That's going to change pretty quickly. Let's see. Tech is now 58. They've been falling like a lead pipe here. But Tech is 0-4 in quadrant 1, 5-3 in quadrant 2. Virginia, so they've got work to do, obviously. And even though somehow that Lunardi's got them as one of the last 4 out, that is hard to figure. But Virginia, Virginia's up to 96. We moved up 4 spots last night. So that somehow beating a bad Louisville team got you there. Virginia's 1-3 in quad 1, 3-2 in quad 2. So 4-5 overall. But you got these games coming up. Notre Dame is going to be because it's a road game, that's a quad 1 game. So you talk about, you know, the chance to make some noise. Miami, obviously, at home is going to be at home's a quad. Miami's 67 in the net. They beat Duke. They've got a better, everything is better for them than Tech, and they're worse than Tech in the quad. But I think by the end of the season, that'll be a quad 1 game for Virginia, even the home game. At Duke's obviously quad 1. At Virginia Tech, because Tech is, I don't know by the end of the season if it's going to be a quad 1, but the at Tech will be a quad 1. At Miami would be a quad 1. Duke again, quad 1. At Florida State's a quad
1. So about 7 or 8 games.
The fact that the schedule is so backloaded now, you got to win some of these games. But Scott, when I ran the numbers now, we've played 2 of the 12 games so far. When I ran the numbers last week, I said if Virginia can finish 8-4, now they're 1-1, so we got to finish out 7-3. But if we can go 7-3, finish this out at 19-11, go win 1 game in Brooklyn, we'd lose probably on Thursday. I think we'd be playing not Tuesday but Wednesday in Brooklyn. But if we can win 1 game and go 20-12. it'd still be a long weekend. You and I and lots of people would still be doing lots of math to figure out if Virginia can get a bid. But if Virginia finishes 20-12 with this schedule, I think Virginia gets a bid.
And I think Tony Bennett gets coaching his another Coach of the Year award.
And this one would be the best job. I mean, it would be better than the championship year. And even that year after, you know, because we during that year after 2020, which of course didn't end with a tournament with COVID canceling the tournament, that team somehow finished on an 11-1 streak and went, I think 23-7 was the final record. And we thought, man, that team, if that team could win 23 games, Tony Bennett, that's a better job than he did in 2019. Okay, looking back on it, that team had Jay Huff. That team had Mamadi Diakite. That team had Braxton Key. They're all playing in the NBA right now. I think that team had more talent than this team. If he can get this team into a tournament, it's going to be hard to get to that stage. But if he can get this team sniffing the tournament in March, even just sniffing the tournament, I think it's his best job.
Yeah, for sure.
Coaxing an awful lot out of these guys. He's getting his just about max potential out of these guys.
Yeah, he's earning his money. Let's say that. Well, yeah. he comes as close to earning his money as any coach in the country. But I can't figure out how Tech at 10-9 and 2-6 has a net rating in the 50s.
And then Miami's 67, Virginia's 96.
I don't know. I'm pretty good at mathematics, but I can't figure out the formula for that.
I can't either.
Who have they won against? What is their best win?
Signature win. Well, let's look real quick. I pulled them up here. Let's see. I mean, they have a couple of losses of Memphis and Xavier, but Memphis has fallen off since that Memphis game. Memphis is 10-8 now. That game should not. I mean, Memphis is net 74 now. And they lost the game. They lost to Xavier, a depleted Xavier team with a net of 19. They lost to Wake really bad. Wake's 33. I keep telling you who they lost to. They beat St. Bonaventure, but St. Bonaventure's net's 94, so I wouldn't call that. They've got a loss to NC State just like we do. Theirs was at home to a NET 113 team. They did beat Notre Dame, and that's net 72, though. So that's – you can't hang your hat on a net 72.
And that was in Blacksburg, right?
They have no – that was in Blacksburg. They have no quad one wins. So when you ask the question, what's their signature win? Nothing in quad one. And quad one is either – what is it? 1-25 at home, 1-50 neutral, 1-75 on the road. They haven't beaten anybody with those qualifications. They are 5-3 in quadrant two. 0-2 in quadrant three, and then 5-0 in quadrant four. They're 10-9 with no signature wins and you know, a couple of bad losses. So I don't know. I can't answer the question in the affirmative.
Well, if they keep playing like they're playing, that'll just keep dropping. So we have to keep winning. Don't worry about what everyone else is. But the bad and the good. The bad is we got a hell of a tough schedule ahead of us, and the good is that's the best thing that could happen to us.
Yeah, with those losses, I mean Virginia losing to Navy, losing to JMU. You know if you win those two games, we're talking a lot differently now. But even then, you still want to go. We would want to finish well down the stretch. Well, those two losses, you need to make up some ground. You know, the thing is, it's a different team than played in November, though, Scott. I think this team. I like this team now. I didn't like this team. For example, sitting on the couch watching the JMU game, I didn't like this team then. But Reese Beekman is a different player. Armon Franklin's had a couple of off nights recently, but boy, he had a 6 or 7 game stretch to make you think that he can be a regular contributor. Even last night with an off night, he was in double digits. Jaden Gardner, we know what he is now. He's a mid-range jump shooter, but he still scores 14 points a game and does what he needs to do. Kea Clark, if he can play consistently like he did last night or consistently like he did in the Syracuse game a couple weeks ago, if you get that Kea most nights, if you get 10 points and 9 rebounds out of your center, whoever it is on the floor at the moment, and you shorten your bench and your bench is the other center and then Cody Statman, and Statman has been a little more confident lately. I think if that 7-man rotation, can stay healthy, continue playing good basketball, I think this team can surprise some people.
So I know we don't have time now because we've been almost an hour, but one of these podcasts, we need to put on our psychologist hats or gowns or suits, and we need to discuss Statman. I just can't figure him out. I just can't figure Cody out. He's the kind of guy you want to love. You know, he looks just like the boy you hope your daughter brings home to date, you know, but I just can't figure him out. He looks so promising at times, and then at other times he just looks like someone's let a little white rabbit out on the floor and not get stepped on.
Because when he shoots the ball, he looks so good. He's got he reads angles well on bank shots from the side. He's a good 3-point shooter. He seems like he handles the ball pretty well. He's a good passer. But too often what he does when he catches a pass off those screens is he immediately passes it back to somebody. It's almost like it's a hot potato and he doesn't want anything to do with it. And that's the frustration. He's a senior, you know, that he's been in the system and he knows how to play. He just seems like he's so, whether timid or team oriented, you want him to be just a tad bit selfish because he actually can do stuff with the ball.
So last night I was talking to someone that had been following Virginia basketball as long as I have, not maybe a little longer, and they made an interesting comparison to Stat. And this is going to outdate you or predate you or Chris, because you're not going to know much about. But Terry Holland had a player well known to us that live in the Valley, Mark Newland,
okay,
from Lehigh, was the state player of the year, and he came to Virginia. Mark was just a great. Great, great young kid. And Mark seldom got off the bench. He was never in the rotation. But when he got in the game, even garbage time or whatever, he played well. And the rap on Mark was he was just such a nice guy that he couldn't get on the court and play with any tenacity. Terry let Mark start his senior year in his senior game. And I think it was against Maryland, and Mark scored 18 points. And Terry joked afterwards that Mark Newland was single-handedly just about destroyed Terry Holland's career because for 4 years, Mark never got off a bench. And Mark was almost the same personality. I mean, I don't know Cody, but I did know Mark. Just such a wholesome, nice young man that when he stepped on the floor, he just looked like the last, he just wanted to say, excuse me, may I take this shot? Things like that. I wonder if it's just a case with Cody that he's just too nice a guy. Maybe he needs someone to just break his nose or something.
Well, I used to say the same thing, and you might have agreed too, or maybe even observed it yourself, Mike Toby. Super nice kid. Boy, interviewing him, he was so well spoken and a pleasure to talk with. And you just wanted you wanted him to go out in the court and smack people around a little bit. And I'd say the same with Jay Huff. Jay Huff, gosh, he maybe even a nicer version of Mike Toby. Yeah, I mean, that's part of what it is Tony recruits all these nice kids. It's smart kids who, you know, do other things.
Under Tony, can you think of any player that is just comes into the game with that mentality that he's just going to, you know, knock people around? And
Malcolm Brogdon is the one guy that I can think of. Yeah.
Diakite?
I don't even know Diakite. I mean, I think when I think of guys, because Diakite playing a forward position, you know, he was a power forward and center. You don't grab the ball and do stuff. Brogdon, we lost the game, but I'll never forget ACC tournament semifinal 2015, Virginia, North Carolina. Virginia was down 57-38, ended up losing the game 72-68. At one point, though, Brogdon scored 19 straight points for Virginia. He basically said, I am not, I mean, they lost, but I'm not going to let us lose. we might lose, but we're not going to go down like this. And that's Virginia doesn't have a lot of guys like that. Ty Jerome was like that. Ty Jerome, big shot Ty, but even before, I mean, his freshman year, remember he hit that the big shot against Villanova. Now Villanova ended up tipping the ball in at the buzzer and won the game. So another game we lost, I'm mentioning, but Ty Jerome hit a couple of big shots in the last minute of that game, and he was still kind of earning his minutes at that time. He was a guy that his other best offer was Iona, and we're like, what's this guy even doing at the ACC level? And then in that game against Villanova, he basically said, I'm the guy. And so, you know, a couple guys like that who wanted the ball in their hands when things were do or die, those guys did that. This year's team, I think it's lacking. Last year's team probably too. Last year's team had a lot of talented guys, but there wasn't one guy who said, give it to me. God, if there's anybody, and people hate it, for some reason hate him for this, no one else steps up on this team. K.A. Clark steps up on this team, but he's not Malcolm Brogdon in his ability to finish it out, or Ty Jerome in his ability to finish it out. But this team is lacking the killer instinct that you mentioned there. And if anybody's got it, it's K.A. Clark. But man, when you talk about the recent vintage Virginia, Malcolm Brogdon all day long.
Yeah, I think you're right. Malcolm I can give you some players that didn't have that. I mean, it worked that they were just all American kids. It turned out to be pretty good basketball players. Joe Harris, for one. I mean, I don't think Joe would be, would be considered. Well, maybe I'm wrong. But I mean, would Joe Harris fit that? I don't think he would fit that category as being a player that's just going to take over. Or
didn't he? He had 36 in the game against Duke, and that was a big night. But you know, I think the difference is he played off ball more than Malcolm did. And you know, Joe would catch and shoot. And plus, it's hard. They both play on the same team, and it's hard for there to be two alphas on the team. I mean, he's another guy. You know, not diminishing Joe at all. He was certainly more aggressive. He didn't shy away from shooting the ball. Anybody who puts up 36 on Duke in a game in JPJ for a big win is not shy. But so no, I would agree. Joe could be that guy, but still, even on those teams, he was outshined by Malcolm, I think.
Well, from watching some of our incoming players for next year, that's why I said this year, I'm just looking. Yeah, it would be great. It'd be the icing on the cake if we could make the NCAA tournament, but I'm just looking for improvement, and I'm seeing that. That's why this season is, to me, starting to become successful, whether we make the tournament or not, because I'm seeing improvement in Beekman, seeing significant improvement in Cedric. And those are the guys that are going to get a lot of minutes next year. Kafar as well. So
yeah.
I'm not as hell bent on making the tournament. Yeah, I'd love to make it, but if we at the end of the season are one of those teams that we think we should have been in, but we didn't quite make it, and we've got those guys trending in the right direction, and for me, that our next season starts at the day this season ends, whether it be an NIT or at the end of the ACC tournament. Who knows?
Yeah, I think postseason is a goal. NIT is probably more likely, obviously, with where things stand in terms of the metrics right now. But I'm still not giving up on this team. I think that Beekman is playing so well right now. I love what the two guys who play center are doing. If Gardner and Franklin can just be a little more consistent, if Clark can be more consistent, them at their best or 90% of their best, plus Beekman, plus the centers, that group, they're not going to win a championship. They're not going to go 6-0 in March and early April, but they can sneak into the tournament and make somebody uncomfortable, because they have to, that team has to play against the pack line defense and the mover blocker offense. And, you know, on a given night, they can maybe surprise somebody. I mean, this team beat Providence, who's going to be a 3 or 4 seed in the tournament. They beat that team by 18 points. So nobody, if this team sneaks its way into the tournament, nobody's going to want to play Virginia in the first or second round. And, you know, that might be the ceiling for this team, and that's okay.
Yeah, because it's building for 2023.
Yeah, you know, think about 2016-2017. It had, we're a year before that in one sense. The 2016-2017 team had London Parentes as a senior point guard. It had a young Ty Jerome, a young Kyle Guy. It had a guy named DeAndre Hunter redshirting. And that team eventually won a championship a couple. I mean, they were a number one seed twice. We all know what happened the first time. I won't mention that again, but because of what happened the first time, they won a championship the second time they were the number one seed. And but that team in 2016-2017 took some lumps. And this group's taken some lumps. And, you know, but there was some growth. I mean, you know, Beekman growing this year. Think about Ty Jerome, his first year. Of course, Beekman's a second-year player, but think about what Ty Jerome, his growth from year one to year two to year three. Beekman is showing a similar trend. I think we get Kihei back next year. I think that we'll have Cafaro and Shedrick back to reprise their role as our two-man number five. Wouldn't surprise me if Gardner's not back next year. Next year's team could be very deep. It could have experience and youth. And you know, but let's get these guys through this year first. And I still think this year's team can make some noise.
I hope you're right. I think we're seeing bits and pieces of a lot of promise, you know.
But I'm the eternal optimist, so keep that in mind, listeners out there. Scott knows this. Scott's probably he's not an eternal pessimist, but he's the realist.
Bad is going to happen, it's going to happen to us.
Okay, so he's a bit of a pessimist, but
yeah. But I'd like to say realist, but in all honesty, more of a pessimist, because as I said, I've followed his team for a long, long time, and I watched this team, saw every one of Ralph's, practically every one of his games in his entire career. We probably should have won three national championships, but there was always something that got in the way, you know.
If there's a drop of glass in the water, I see it as half full. If the glass is 98% full, Scott sees the potential for it to leak or spill.
Or someone come by and knock it off and break it.
Exactly. So yeah. That's the two voices you're hearing here today.
I'm the person that says maybe you better nail that glass into the table so no one will come by and break it and drop it or knock it onto the floor and break it.
And I'm pretty sure that even though the glass is probably empty, that there's a chance it's going to be half full in a second or two. So
exactly.
Well, this has been a fun podcast. We'll get back together later this week and actually do a preview of Notre Dame once we both get a chance to study Notre Dame a little bit more. It's only Tuesday. We got a long week to go here to get to all the way to Saturday with UVA Notre Dame. So for Scott German, I'm Chris Cram signing off. Everyone have a great day.